Okay, Mr. Chair, we are recording and broadcasting whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. So good morning, everyone. My name is Kenneth Ehrman, and I serve as the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission. Today, I'll be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. And with that, I call to order the August 11, 2022 commission meeting. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. And as a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live webcast and can be viewed at www.calspan.org. The archive video will also be available at the Calspan website. Before we start with the reports on today's agenda, let's please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you for all of that. And now I'll ask Megan to take roll for the commission meeting.
Thank you, Chair Ehrman. Good morning. So let's see, I'm going to start with Commissioner Murillo of Coronado, California.
I'm present.
Present. Commissioner Tom Pierre of San Francisco, California.
I'm present.
Present. Vice Chair Catherine Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Present.
Present. Chair Kenneth Ehrman of Oxnard, California.
Present.
Present. And our newest Commissioner, Jose Gonzalez of Sacramento, California.
Present.
Present. All commissioners present. Thank you, Chair Ehrman.
Thank you, Megan. And now we'll move on with the introduction of commission staff. Starting off, we have State Parks DBW staff. We have Armando Quintero, Director of California State Parks. And do we have Liz McGurk, Chief Deputy Director?
Chair Ehrman, I do not see Liz on this morning.
Next, we have Ramona Fernandez, Deputy Director, Boating and Waterways. And we also have Catherine Tobias, Legal Counsel for the Department of Parks and Recreation. And next, I'd like to introduce our new Commissioner, Jose Gonzalez, and ask if you'd like to say a few words, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Only very briefly to say buenos dias, gracias, thank you all. It's a pleasure and honor to be here with you all and do my part and be in service of both of the purpose and mission of this commission and for the public good of the state. So thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. So next, we'll go to the chairman's report, and I'll save my report till we get to the ad hoc committee reports. And commission activity updates. Do we have any updates from the commissioner, Vice Chair Katie Hawkins, Catherine Hawkins?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Ehrman. I think first I just want to congratulate Ramona on her role as the deputy for Boating and Waterways. I just value your partnership and collaboration with this commission, so thank you. And of course, my colleague, Jose Gonzalez, excited to work with you on the commission. I guess just commissioner's report from my end, I had the honor to travel down to Southern California and spent some time in June, early June in San Onofre and go and see that state park and also learn the history of that region and the vast history of the indigenous population down there and what that area means to those individuals, as well as the incredible access to coastal access that is happening down there with families, surfers, beachgoers. And so it was just an incredible state park to go visit and spend some time in, had the opportunity to surf down Trestle. So that was pretty cool. And then here in the Northern Sierra, we are seeing a lot of folks as temperatures are rising all throughout California, people are retreating to the mountains. And I just like to say that I applaud all the state park employees up here in the Truckee Tahoe region, as well as in the Plumas, because we're seeing, again, a lot more participants enjoying our state parks, and they're doing an excellent job in managing the crowds and, you know, the impacts that happen with crowds coming in. And also, too, finally, On a personal note, I was appointed by Secretary Crowfoot to the 30 by 30 Partnership Coordination Committee. And so I'm excited for this role, which is to task, which is we are tasked to advance 30 by 30, engage and empower partnership across the state. So again, just honored to be in this small cohort leading and the implementation of this incredible initiative by the state of California. And that is my report.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hawkins. Commissioner Peer. You're on mute, sir.
All right, here we go. So I was saying good morning to everyone. Tom Peer here. Special hello to Commissioner Gonzalez. It's a real pleasure to meet you virtually. And looking forward, obviously, to working with you in the future. And also congratulations to Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez, but I now have to learn to drop that part of the title. Having said that, I would just like to thank everyone for accommodating my very unusual situation of being out of state for this particular meeting and being unable to travel. And so many thanks for everyone accommodating this virtual meeting, which I kind of think was at my behest. That said, I do not have much of a report because I've been in a language lockdown in Vermont for the last 2 months, and I have not had the opportunity to really, I haven't been in California for nearly 2 months as I've been studying Italian here. So I have nothing further to say, but thank you, everyone, and good to meet you, Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Commissioner Peer. And Commissioner Murillo?
Apart from congratulations to Jose and Ramona, I have nothing to contribute at this time.
Thank you, Commissioner Peer. And I'll come back to you again, Commissioner Gonzalez. Any interaction or anything you'd like to report?
I would just say thank you. The two things are looking over the commission packet, excited to do some of these site visits and get out there, you know, like just looking at what the impact of both funding but support both from state parks, but of course directly in this work. So I'm excited because I can now go out there and point to community members to be able to say, this is what's supporting this infrastructure, this is what's supporting this access and the like, because I know often for me growing up it was that kind of thing of something might get built, but I might have a complete disconnect in terms of how that actually happened.
Excellent. So I just want to thank all the commissioners for their hard work and dedication to this commission and all your interactions with the public. And next we move on, I'll reintroduce Director Quintero. We welcome you to the commission and provide you an opportunity to speak.
Good morning and thank you, Chairman, and good morning to all of the commissioners. And I too add my congratulations to Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez, who was appointed by Governor Newsom to the role of Deputy Director of the Department of Boating and Waterways. It's really well deserved, and we're so excited that you are serving in this role. And welcome to Jose Gonzalez, our newest Department of Boating and Waterways Commissioner, really a wonderful addition and colleague from the communities that we work with, and really look forward to the continued good work that you are all doing. I just have a few things that I wanted to cover this morning. And one of them is that we continue to work on the structural deficit of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. And I've been talking with Ramona and Liz McGurk, our Chief Deputy Director, about this issue. And we recognize it as something that's really critical in order to keep our granting programs and programs operating. I'd also like to acknowledge that Ramona and I have discussed a letter which we received from the boating community with recommendations relative to the role and the focus of the Division of Boating and Waterways. We are working on the funding or how we want to manage the program for the SB 170, which was the Urban Rivers and Waterways funding. And this will be, we hope to roll this out in another month or so. And it is actually called the Water Connections Initiative. And that'll be describing how we intend to focus those dollars in expanding access to water in the Central Valley primarily, and in California for park poor communities. So we're really excited about that. We also am glad to hear that Commissioner, Vice Chair Hawkins has been appointed to the 30 by 30 advisory board. That'll help, I think, make sure that we align the decisions that we make relative to voting and waterways with the 30 by 30 goals, goals and opportunities. So I would like to just mention a couple things that have been discussed during subcommittee meetings. I think this will be discussed later on in today's conversations. The Surrendered and Abandoned Vessel Exchange Program, there's a budget of $2.75 million for that program. We're interested in seeing that program expand. And I know that Ramona is working to expand collaboration with other agencies to deal with commercial abandoned vessels. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and this seems to be a topic that's continually in the paper every week, certainly in the San Francisco Bay. So this is a critical program. I also want to extend my appreciation for the continued good work that's being done in the Aquatic Invasive Species Program, where we also collaborate with other resources agencies with this program. And, you know, it's really essential that we keep the waterways safe and clear. We are working with other agencies because right now, a lot of the fees that pay for the treatment of invasive species in the Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta and its tributaries comes from boating fees and licenses. But certainly we see that there are other beneficiaries to taking care and addressing the expansion of these invasive species, which affect much more than just recreational boating. We also are talking about the alternative funding to support the public beach restoration program, which has to do with shoreline erosion and beach nourishment along the coast. Those continue to be a high focus for the department in working with boating and waterways. So with that, again, I'd like to thank you all for the good work that you do. Congratulations to Ramona and Commissioner Gonzalez and to the public. Thanks so much for your participation in these meetings. All best to each of you. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Quintero. So next up, we'll discuss the ad hoc committee reports, and we'll start out with Commissioner Peer. Do you have an update on your ad hoc committee?
I suppose since our last full commission meeting, I believe we've met an additional two times. Perhaps three. We tried to set our meetings on a monthly basis. I have submitted to the chair a memo containing our procedures that we undertook, the various programs reviewed, the participants in the subcommittee meetings, and the recommendations that we came to. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you're how deep you want to go at this point. I did speak with Ramona prior to this meeting, and she said that she had received the memo that I had sent around to folks, summarizing in whatever, I suppose it's a semi-formal format. Well, I'd actually just say it's the formal recommendations of the subcommittee. So, like I say, I'm not sure what you want to do now, how deep you want to dive into that. I'm happy to talk ad nausea on the various subjects we covered, that at your discretion, of course.
Maybe a brief overview of the what you've come up to this point would be good.
Okay. Well, I think. I'll review. So we started these meetings Well, I suppose it was last fall, nearly a year ago, and we've met on seven occasions over the interim period. And I approached it from the perspective of number one, ensuring that everyone was fully all the stakeholders and various participants in the meetings were fully educated, not only on the basis of the existing programs as they are today, but to try to rewind the clock and understand the historical bases for some of the programs that the division currently oversees. And so we started with the assistance of Karen Dill. We started by reviewing all of the programs that the, I believe it's 27 or so programs that are administered by the division. And we basically went through the list and I solicited opinion from people as to whether or not they felt that any that a particular program, as we went through the list of 27, whether they were there were controverted issues associated with it. Having done so, we circled back and identified, I think, six programs that we think we feel are the consensus. And I use that word advisedly, and I'll get to that in a moment. The consensus was that there should be some better sense of current situation rather than relying on historical bases for the various programs. And so I'm going to sort of drop a footnote and say by consensus, I do not mean to say that our recommendations are the result of unanimous a consensus by the various stakeholders and parties in the meetings. And that consensus at the end of the day, I sort of took a majority view of things. And so that said, I'll drop out of the footnote. And I think the one thing that there was total consensus on was the need for an economic impact report, which has not been conducted since the early 2000s. So that's a very stale report now. And I think there is a consensus among the participants in my subcommittee that there needs to be a better understanding of the economic cost and benefits of the voting community to the state at large. And that in so doing, understanding the economic impacts of the voting community, that may open the door to some other revenue streams and amounts. So that was the one there was no dissent on. We also went through the historical origins said earlier, hold on, now I clicked the wrong button, was discussed briefly earlier. I think there was certainly a sense that the beach erosion control program historically ended up with the division due to the construction of various marinas up and down the coast and the resulting erosion therefrom. And it was the sense from the subcommittee, again, this was a contentious issue, that moving forward, there are other factors at work. So for example, much of the sand on a beach is replenished by a downflow from various rivers. And of course, in a time of drought, that downflow and that natural replenishment of beach is curtailed. And as another example, that obviously I think there's a general consensus within the scientific community about the impact of rising sea levels and what effect that may have, and that we're already experiencing some of those issues in the state, and that accordingly, the responsibility for redressing those issues should not rest primarily with boating and waterways. So that said, I think the recommendation generally was that we should look to other parties, whatever they may be, for perhaps increased fundings for beach restoration programs. And in order to do so, that it would be wise to have a current study or an amalgamation of existing studies to really understand the dynamics of what is currently happening in the state writ large. So I think there's a lot of small studies that have sort of said, okay, what's the effect of the Huntington Beach Harbor on beach erosion, say in Newport Beach, which is downstream from that. But that if we had a better sense, again, and a statewide concept or perspective, that would be a benefit in attempting to address the various parties that have interests in these things. The Aquatic Invasive Species Program, I think there was also consensus there consensus there that the division has sort of historically been overburdened by the invasive species programs in the Delta. And I think there was a real sense that that said that the burden, that the division is properly burdened with zebra mussel programs and various freshwater lakes. And that's something that is appropriate. But, you know, there's all these other stakeholders, we'll call them, or interested parties in water from the Delta, whether that be agriculture, whether that's downstream, downstream users like the city of Los Angeles or whomever utilizes that, that they should be taking a more of a contributory role financially in supporting those things. We also, another point was the private and public and private marina loan programs. I think the consensus there is that that is a program that is not being utilized, much, if not at all. And that while some parties may wish to use it in the future, it does not seem to be of great benefit for the resources of the division. Item number five, the SAVE program. I think there was a great consensus there that that money well spent is getting ahead of the curve in terms of surrendered and abandoned vessels. And if we could allocate more resources to identifying potential derelict vessels, that would be more economically viable use of dollars. And that further, that program be expanded to include identified derelict vessels in private marinas and not just public marinas. And that, again, sort of the state, you know, ultimately has to deal with these vessels and sort of getting ahead of the curve and identifying them, contacting the owners preemptively would be of great benefit. There was some sense among some stakeholders that the statutory authority of this board be expanded so that not only we have consent for various loans and grants, but that in fact that we have authority over those programs. And I don't know the viability of that politically, and I'm historically really not of great understanding of, you know, it's my understanding the division used to have that, then we got peeled off from Parks and Recs and so forth. I don't know what the political viability of that, but I think it's something worth exploring. And then finally, there was a sense among some that the administrative role of the division be expanded to include vessel registration that is currently administered by the Department of Motor Vehicles. And whether or not that is a viable option technically, that butts up against many issues, not the least of which is a lot of boats are on trailers and the trailers are tagged differently from DMV and not having a CF sticker, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the idea is that by streamlining that process solely through the division, that that the division would be better able to have access to the information contained therein in the application for federal grants and other needs and necessities that the division has, but which currently cannot receive because that information lies with the DMV and it's apparently very difficult to extract that information. So that's in a nutshell. As I said, I circulated my letter of recommendation to Chair Ehrman, and that's a summary. I think you find more detail in what I wrote, and so that basically summarizes 7 months of work. I really just want to, in closing, just really commend the involvement of really dozens and dozens of people from the community and stakeholders, and I really valued their input both on the historical side of things. And also their thoughts about going forward. And last but certainly not least, of course, Ramona and Karen for really doing a lot of heavy lifting in the subcommittee meetings. And I certainly appreciate that. All right. So, Kenneth, you wanted a short answer. Of course, when you call on me, you get a long answer. So I am now finished. And I'm going to put myself on mute.
Thank you, Commissioner Peer. And now, Megan, do we have any of the attendees wishing to make public comment?
Let's see. So if you wish to make public comment, please use the raised hand feature on Zoom. And I know we may have some participants dialing in by phone. So it's *9 to raise your hand and then *6 to unmute your device. So let's see. It looks like we do have a couple. So I'm going to go ahead and just go down the line here. Gary Desmond, you are unmuted.
Thank you, Megan. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC. Just briefly on, well, I've got to say congratulations to Deputy Director Ramona, as well as welcome to Commissioner Gonzalez, and also pleased to hear Vice Chair Hawkins on the 30 by 30 appointment. And look forward to your engagement there. That's awesome. You know, that's awesome. And then in terms of the subcommittee process and all of the subcommittees and all the effort, our organization, I know, does not stand alone in appreciating this effort. The stakeholder process, the subcommittees, the extra effort that Ramona and DBW's division staff is spending on this project to go into the programs, and each of you commissioners that are engaged. It's very, very satisfying to the boating community to know that you care as much as you do to be shown in this kind of exercise. And our organization and others did send in a letter in mid-July with what we were seeing emerging from the different subcommittees. And, each of these issues are being addressed and are being considered and were being considered before we wrote the letter. It was just meant to highlight the issues and what we're thinking as a community where we have common interests, and we look forward to the next steps to see what the recommendations will actually emerge from the subcommittees once you all decide on your recommendations to the division and move forward. We think the major themes, Commissioner Peer, addressed all those themes that we are discussing with all stakeholders, but we're encouraged. We look forward to perhaps an enhanced DBW coming out of this process. And so thank you.
Thank you for that. Megan, any others wishing to comment?
Yes, I have Andrea Luker. And Andrea, you should be online.
Great, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Perfect, thank you. Good morning, my name is Andrea Luker and I'm the president of the California Association of Harbor Masters and Port Captains. Of course, a congratulations to Ramona on her recent appointment. We, our organization, certainly looks forward to continue working with her. This sounds a lot like Mr. Desmond's public comment, but on behalf of our organization, we wanted to express our thanks for this subcommittee process, which was started almost a year ago and culminating in recommendations from each subcommittee. We've been pleased with the process. It's provided so much additional information and education about the programs that the division does, been very helpful. The amount of information that's been prepared by staff to help us along the journey really has been amazing. A special thanks to Commissioner Peer, who has been working with the Program Development Subcommittee, and staff member Karen Dill, and of course, Ramona. We are also, our organization is also excited about the next steps, and we are very appreciative of this engaging opportunity for the stakeholders. That's it for today. Have a great rest of your meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Megan, anyone else?
At this time, I'm seeing no other hands raised. Just a reminder, it's *9 to raise your hand if you're dialing in by phone. But Mr. Chair, I see no other public comments at this time.
Thank you. And we'll move on. Vice Chair Hawkins, do you have a report on your ad hoc committee?
Thank you, Chair Ehrman. To be honest, Tom did a great overview of kind of a number of the initiatives that we are working on. We did since the last commissioners meeting, commission meeting, we did meet twice. And I just, again, a lot of gratitude to.
Hey, honey, you're safe. I'm glad I jumped on this morning. It was way earlier than I thought.
Can you all mute her? Okay, thank you. Sorry. And I'd just like to, again, express gratitude to the department staff for leading these conversations. Similar to Commissioner Peer, the alternative funding subcommittee, we are exploring, like, what are those other revenue generators for our programs. And again, we're in the recommendation and exploring these opportunities and options. But again, we need to reconvene here after this meeting. And I think it's gonna happen, you know, in the fall before the next commission meeting. But our goal is to have a set of recommendations by the end of the year. So that's our goal I'm working towards. So that's all I have for that report on our subcommittee work.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hawkins. Megan, do we have anybody wishing to make public comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I see no hands raised.
Okay, so I'll move on to my subcommittee report. We kind of started out with two topics, registration fees and the possibility of registration fees for non-motorized boating. We continue to meet every month, and I will say this, again, like the previous reports, just the participation, the assistance by boating waterway staff, in particular my committee, Joanne Andrade, has really made this really beneficial. I think without their support, it'd be really difficult to gather the information that we need. Ramona attends the majority of them and brings a wealth of knowledge to these as well. And I also thank the stakeholders. Their information and their specific knowledge of these areas is invaluable. And so has been the participation. I think they've been very willing to adjust. My schedule makes it kind of difficult to meet, and we meet at kind of strange times, but they've always been very generous with their time. We've made some progress real close to consensus on the non-motorized boating fees. We've kind of examined a few different states and the way they do it. I think we're all really in agreement that some type of fee is likely to be needed. It's just the mechanism and how we do it. Some specific items about stickering and different things like that. And since we decided to tackle each item individually, we hope to finish this, wrap this up, and we'll move on to the boating registration fees. But we also hope to have some type of deliverables by the end of the year. And I believe with the direction we're heading in this group, I see that happening. And again, I just want to thank everybody for their time and patience to attend these meetings. I think they're extremely valuable. And I think that we're really making some great progress. And I will echo what Vice Chair Hawkins said as well. There's kind of a commonality amongst the ad hocs. A lot of the different topics come up in all of them. So we appreciate the stakeholders for kind of bring in the different items within all the meetings. A lot of these are very similar, and so we appreciate all of that. And that's really all I have for my subcommittee. And do we have anybody wishing to comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I see no public comments.
Okay. And Commissioner Murillo, did you have anything you wanted to add to the three subcommittee meetings?
Very quickly, just across the board. Tom mentioned the economic impact statement. I think this is a tool we really need. You know, we need a a broad idea of just what boating and waterways brings to the state of California. So once again, I'd like just like to interject that. More importantly, staff, and this is sort of a parochial perspective, but I think a future meeting at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, either Director Lyman or Assistant Director Ritzman would be happy to talk to staff about the possibility of the use of the forum there. Could be very educational, especially where it comes to sediment transfer, beach erosion, and the viability of projects, large or small, in this area and any other scientific interests. And Scripps is very, very good about involving all of his partners up and down the state, be it Sacramento or for that matter, Woods Hole back east. So I think it would be a day well spent if that could be arranged. Finally, just one thing on DMV registration or registration fees. DMV takes a lot of hits, but one thing I've noticed, I've never had a problem paying my registration timely. It's pretty darn easy. And as long as staff is working with motor vehicle staff, I see no reason for a fix here. And I'm certainly open to more discussion in this area. But the one thing that always seems to work very quickly is go online, pay your registration, you get your little tag, and try to remember to put it in the car. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Murillo. And any other public comments, Megan, before we close out?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I'm seeing none.
Okay. So we'll move on. Remind the audience, there's multiple public comment periods have been scheduled throughout the meeting, and they will occur after the following reports: the Deputy Director update, voting infrastructure grants, aquatic center grants, safe boating education and outreach, voting clean and green. Also, agenda item number 9 will be the public comment period for non-agenda items. The comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items that are not currently on the agenda. Now, remind the group that each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Members of the public are not required to provide their names. However, stating it would make it easier for staff to follow up and make contact with the members of the public for any additional information if necessary. Individual speakers may not pull their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. And with that, we'll move on to the Deputy Director's report. And I just want to take a moment to congratulate Ramona Fernandez on her appointment. I think she brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the division. I think that the work she's been doing for a long time is invaluable. So again, I just want to echo the comments. Congratulations. And now we'll move on to her report.
So good morning, everyone, and thank you. And truly, thank you all for the well wishes. Truly appreciate it. First, I'd like to welcome our newest commissioner, Commissioner Gonzalez. I look forward to you being part of this commission and bring a different, you know, perspective to the rest of the commissioners here. And also, I am truly honored and humbled to serve as your deputy director. So, I've gotten a lot of excellent support from the executive team here at the department, as well as having a strong, dedicated management team within DBW. So obviously I'm not alone. I have a lot of great people and support in the things that we do here at the division. Again, we have some challenges moving ahead, but I am confident that as we continue to work together, we will better serve our boating community. I do have a short update today, and so I will go ahead and begin. Next slide, please. First, I'd like to update on new members of the DBW team. Jamal Harbison came aboard DBW on July 11th. He came to us from the Department of Teachers Credentialing. He's a Staff Services Manager 1, and he'll be providing a new supervisor providing support in our on our administrative team. Another crew member is Sam Texiera. She started on June 1st. Sam is our analyst for our for-hire operator, vessel insurance verification, and the accident reports programs. She comes to us from the Department of Consumer Affairs in the Medical Board of California. Next slide, please. Other administrative updates includes our continued recruitment efforts for our hiring priority positions within the division. Additionally, we now have a continuous testing for the aquatic pest control technician series. This will allow us to capture more qualified candidates and expedite the civil service process. Next slide, please. And then before I kind of get into this slide, I do want to acknowledge our DBW Administrative Services team for all of their diligent work in ensuring that the administrative responsibilities of our program deliveries are met. Many of the examples are listed on the screen, as well as HR area and budgeting. You know, at each commission meeting, we always provide the commission, you all, with program updates. But, you know, in reality, we really couldn't possibly carry on or out our programs without the support of our administrative team within DBW and as well as the larger administrative support division that serves the division. Next slide, please. You know, when we talk about vessel registration, this slide, there's been a slight increase since our last report. I believe in February, there was about 500,000 registered voters, registered vessels at that time. And it is continuously increasing, but we do continue to work with the DMV on assessing this report. The DMV is looking at whether there's a process delay or if there's you know, a higher percentage of late or pending registrations. They're also evaluating, looking at the data of how many vessels that were in California for the 1921, which expired in December of 2021, and subsequently transferring possibly to other states. So, you know, we continue to collaborate and work with the DMV on their process and help them understand, you know, our program need and services that we need to provide. And there's about 29,000 documented vessels from the last report we received from the United States Coast Guard. Next slide, please. So our recreational boating accident statistics, as you can see on this chart, this is a 5-year historical statistics that shows accidents, injuries, and fatality totals. These are incidents that have been collected from the division. As you can see throughout the years, it fluctuates from year to year. For calendar year 2021, there's been about 565 accidents, 243 injuries, and 40 fatalities. The division is still actively collecting the 2022 accident reports, but to date, there's been 205 accidents, 65 injuries, and 18 fatalities. I am happy to report that we will be soon producing once again the boating accident statistics report. This report is currently going through the review process, and as soon as it is available, it will be made available to the public and on our and on our website. Next slide, please. So budget this year. This is again just a recap of the final budget act. I think we shared this as the proposed, but there hasn't been obviously much change to our budget in this budget year. We continue this year of receiving the $30 million general fund transfer in support of the Public Beach Restoration Fund and also the Aquatic Invasive Species Program and ongoing support. Next slide, please. This as well just shows the breakdown that our budget within the division of local assistant and support. So local assistant dollars and support dollars. And next slide, please. And this spreadsheet is a kind of a working document. This is our budget for this year within that all programs that support the our boating and waterways efforts within DBW, as well as divisions that have boating programs outside of the division. So we're pretty close to what we were last year. Again, there's been some slight increases due to budget adjustments, but we're pretty much allocations are pretty much the same as they were previous year. And next slide, please. So I wanted to, this slide I wanted to recognize in talking with the AIS manager, program manager, Eddie Hard, yesterday. We realized that we are in our 40th year of the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program. So I just wanted to recognize this program under the leadership of Eddie Hard and just kind of show over the years of, you know, where we've been and, you know, how far we've come. You know, we've come a long way, baby, from, you know, 1983 or 82 when the program was first implemented. So just a couple key points here. In 82, the division was the lead agency for water hyacinth. In 1996, DBW was the lead agency for the Brazilian waterweed. And then in 2013, as we all can remember, that's when the division started working with CFDW, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, on all future invasive plants to target. Some other notes then and now, we started with one invasive plant. And now in 22, we are we are tasked with controlling 9 plants. We started with limited staff and equipment to handle this. We have grown to be better, to smarter, and so we, you know, have more resources in this program. We worked in the past with surveys and complaints on targeted invasive plants in the 80s. And now we're utilizing remote sensing, mapping, data management, collaboration, and citizen science to work under smarter instead of harder. The program only used herbicides in the 1980s through 2000s. And now we're using integrated pest management through biocontrol, mechanical harvesting, herbicide control, and physical control tools. We used to target as much water hyacinth as possible at the start. And now the program targets invasive plants in critical areas to provide the most benefit to the Delta by supporting the environment, economy, and public health. So again, you know, this is pretty cool. I mean, the program again has been, you know, 40 years, and we look forward to further collaborating with other state agencies. As was mentioned, we currently are in contract with the Department of Water Resources. We are in discussion with the Department of Fish and Wildlife on additional resources to support the program financially. Next slide, please. And Commissioner Chair, that completes my report. And this is just a reminder in coordination with our sister agency to save our water. So that completes my report. If there's not any other questions, I will continue with the legislative update. Report.
Did we have anyone wishing for public comment, Megan?
At this time, I do not see anyone from the public raising their hands. Just a reminder, if you're dialing by phone, it's *9 to use the raise hand feature. But I do see Tom's hand up. Commissioner Pierce's hand is up.
Am I recognized, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I just, one first question was on the fatalities. Can you give me some context on that? I understand that there's probably 1,000 times more motor vehicle fatalities in a year than it is. Is that like lakes? I mean, it's a shame to see 50 people dying every year or whatever the number happens to be. And I understand the department's got a lot of divisions, has a lot of programs to help, educate people on motor safety. But can you just give me a little context on what this is all about?
Yeah, so we collect statistics on, particularly on the fatalities. We have statistics, I don't have them in front of me, so I do apologize, but we do collect it on, type of vessel, whether they were wearing a life jacket, statistics on boating under the influence. Historically, I think the percentage has been no life jacket, the fatalities has been, they weren't wearing a life jacket or alcohol related. So we collect that data, and as far as type of vessels they use or was in use when the fatalities happened. So motorized versus non-motorized. So those are kind of the statistics that we collect in terms of all the information there, but specifically on fatalities that we'll collect and determine that percentage. And then what we'll do in terms of education is we use that data for our next campaign, and we'll target the areas because we also look geographically at where these are happening. And then what we'll do is we'll use that data to support where we will be educating on our next, during the next boating season.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I had just a question. Unfortunately, the deck was really small here, so I couldn't see it. But having relating to the invasive species in the Delta, I think you said we the division are working with other agencies to basically get some more skin in the game. So can you give me as briefly as possible, because I know we have a full agenda here today, the existing state of affairs, who's contributing, who isn't contributing, and who the other people, other agencies who we are working with for more contribution? Because this was a big point of not contention, but we seem to not have a great sense of education on this issue in my subcommittee. Yes. So there's an existing state of who's paying for it now,
yes,
and who are we looking to sort of pony up in the future?
Yes. So we're in current contract with the Department of Water Resources, and they contribute, and I believe Eddie Hart is on the line if I don't get this accurate, but I believe it's about $6 million per year I believe we're renegotiating that contract now. We've been in contract with them for the last several years. So they participate and contribute financially. It's a reimbursable contract. with it's a, called an interagency agreement. So we basically we pay for it out of our funds, and then we're reimbursed through this contract process. Another agency that Eddie and his team has been talking with is the Department of Fish and Wildlife Services. So we hope to mirror what we're doing, maybe not the financial dollar amount that we have with DWR, but we're looking at mirroring that same idea with the Department of Fish and Wildlife in their focus of what they're doing in the Delta and to help us with the aquatic plant control program.
So currently they're not contributing.
That is correct.
Okay. And then, so I can understand what the Department of Water Resources does, is that agricultural interests?
That is...
I frankly just don't know. It's an open-ended question. I shouldn't
water, try to tell you what it Eddie, is. Eddie, can you help me out here? Can you unmute Eddie?
Yes, let me promote him to a panelist real quick. Eddie, you should be on the line.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Commissioner Peer?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Good morning. So, yes, the Department of Water Resources, as Ramona said, it's a five-year agreement for $32.5 million. So it's approximately $6 million in reimbursements per year, specifically designed around California Natural Resource Agency initiative to restore certain parts of the Delta pursuant to a judicial decree. So up to 10,000 acres will be restored. And given we at the department are the lead agency to address invasive plants, they reached out to us. And this comes from the State Water Resources Recreation Fund, which is funded by Metropolitan Water District, among other parties. So most of Water Resources department is funded by special districts, water purveyors throughout the state, not limited to general fund, and et cetera.
Thanks, Eddie.
Okay. Welcome. So, and then just Eddie, I think I understand. So,
and then Cal Fish and Wildlife
districts would include southern water users like LA or what have you?
Metropolitan Water District is the primary one. We are currently in discussions with, and that's the state family, if you will. You recall that the state of California has two conveyance systems, the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project. And so the Central Valley Project water users we are working with, which is the San Luis Delta Mendota Water Authority, which is a myriad of family of water users, both urban and ag, but primarily agriculture. And so we are working to try to sort out how do we have interagency agreements with those parties, because they are a tremendous beneficiary.
Okay. Okay, that's exactly what I was driving at. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
And just to add, Ramona, for your everybody's background, California Fish and Wildlife, what we're getting assistance working through the administrative process on that is funding to remove vegetation, aquatic weeds, where they're trying to restore areas where the nutria is destroying the environment in the Delta and Southern tributaries. So that's a complicated situation as well, but they can't remove the nutria unless we can help them remove the weeds.
Got it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Commissioner. Mr. Chair, I do see Commissioner Gonzalez's hand is raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Chair. This is just a quick kind of follow-up question to that. So is my understanding somewhat correct to be able to say, here is a sister agency that kind of some way has a mandate, right, of restoration, for example, and it just aligns really well with boating water, which does and is tasked with in terms of a species. So is that kind of the way that it aligns really well? So this is a way that we can have like complementary impact, and we're trying to assess as well what that looks like with other sister agencies like Fish and Wildlife.
Is that a question for me, Commissioner Gonzalez?
I would say yes, unless
Ramona, go ahead, take a stab at it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So yes. So I think what we've learned, you know, that with in our program, and also, you know, in collaboration with our other sister agencies, that we all play a key role in the Delta. So I think, you know, as we learn other programs and as we work in the Delta and talk to those that are boots on the ground, you know, Eddie's group with other state departments that also are working in the Delta, that we do have a lot of common, you know, areas that and ways that we can work together that complement each other's mission. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. I just want to, I feel comforted in kind of in giving credit to that ecosystem approach, so it doesn't feel so isolated and segmented in ways that, you know, why not take benefit of the complementary ecosystem approach rather than feeling like everybody's doing their own thing, and it's better served in the way that I'm hearing it.
Yes.
Do we have any other commissioner comments or questions? Okay, could you continue, please, Director Fernandez?
Yes, absolutely. So I will read verbatim the legislative update provided by the legislative office here at the Department of Parks and Recreation. So this is the California legislation summary. This report provides a summary excerpt and status of legislation affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is accurate as of August 8th, 2022. Assembly Bill 1862, Vessels Public Safety Activities. Summary, this bill would clarify that public safety and lifeguard rescue vessels, including personal watercrafts, are authorized to utilize blue lights and are exempt from the 5-mile-an-hour speed limit identified for specific areas in Harbors and Navigation Code 655.2, which includes within 100 feet of a person bathing or water skiing, within 200 feet or a beach, swimming, floats, diving platforms, etc. The status is ordered to the Assembly of Concurrence for vote. Senate Bill 865, Eggman, California Abandoned and Derelict Commercial Vessel Program. This summary, this bill would establish the California Abandoned and Derelict Commercial Vessel Program within the Natural Resources Agency to be administered by the State Lands Commission and would establish the Abandoned and Derelict Commercial Vessel Program Trust Fund. The bill would require that State Lands Commission to create an inventory of abandoned and derelict commercial vessels in waters of the state and to establish an abandoned and derelict commercial vessel plan to provide framework to facilitate and track actions that prevent or reduce the number of abandoned and derelict commercial vessels on the waters of the state as specified. The bill would also establish the California Abandoned and Derelict Commercial Vessel Program Coordinating Council within agency to oversee the program, coordinate the removal of derelict commercial vessels, identify all costs associated with vessel removal, and evaluate the program and challenges, and make recommendations to the legislature. The status, the Assembly Appropriation Committee suspense filing hearing on August 11th. That concludes the legislative update, Commissioner Chair.
And Megan, do we have anybody wishing to make public comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I am seeing no hands raised.
And any commissioners with comments or questions? Okay, so at this time, we are going to take a break for 15 minutes, and we will reconvene at 10:18.
Okay, we're recording broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. We'll now reconvene our commission meeting. And at this time, we'll start with department staff reports with Ethan Trattner, please.
Good morning. My name is Ethan Tratner, and I am the BIG and CVA project manager in the Grants and Loans Unit. And today I'll be presenting a program update on the Federal Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, also known as BIG. Next slide, please. The purpose of BIG is to construct, renovate, or maintain visitor tie-up facilities for recreational transient vessels 26 feet or more in length. Transient vessels, as defined in this program, are those that stay 15 days or less. BIG is a federally funded program managed by United States Fish and Wildlife Service and funded from the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. DBW is the designated state entity responsible for administering this program. Next slide, please. The BIG program offers two different grant awards. Tier 1 grants provide up to $200,000 for projects in California, and Tier 2 applications are ranked nationally and up to $1.5 million may be awarded per project. There is $10 million available nationally in this grant cycle. Each grantee must meet all eligibility requirements and provide a minimum of 25% match. DBW accepted applications June 29th, 2022 through August 2nd, 2022, and we received four applications, which DBW is currently reviewing. Only the most competitive applications will be submitted to United States Fish and Wildlife no later than September 22nd for their consideration. Federal awards are typically announced in the spring of each year. Next slide, please. BIG eligible costs include tie-up facilities, which are slips, piers, mooring buoys, docks, and gangways. Amenities may include fuel stations, restrooms, utilities, and laundry. Security is lighting, communications, and beacons. Safe harbor features, which can be breakwaters, wave attenuators, and seawalls. Soft costs, such as engineering and permitting, and these funds can also pay for dredging up to $200,000. Next slide, please. Since the program's inception in 2000, California has been awarded over $18 million for 37 infrastructure grant projects with 27 public and private entities. That's 18 Tier 1 projects and 19 Tier 2 projects. Next slide, please. Currently, DBW has six active BIG projects, which are listed here on the slide. One project, the City of Avalon Pump Out Dock and Water Station, is projected to be completed this year. Next slide, please. DBW will be hosting the BIG Merit Review Panel in Sacramento, California in December 2022. This panel is comprised of U.S. Fish and Wildlife BIG Headquarters Program staff, boating program staff from Fish and Wildlife regional offices, representatives from the state's Organization for Boating Access, and the Sport Fishing and Boating Partnership Council. This panel scores the national BIG applications and selects projects to be awarded. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. I encourage you to visit the DBW Grants and Loans webpage for additional information on the BIG program. Are there any questions regarding BIG or any of the projects at this time?
Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
Herman, I am seeing no public comments at this time.
Do we have any questions or comments from commissioners?
As always.
Go ahead, Tom.
Ethan, so you went by pretty fast, but I picked up a $1.9 million grant for Treasure Island.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, that is like 10 times any other grant. And I thought at the beginning of your presentation, you said that there's a limitation of those grants. So what's, maybe you can just give the commission some context on why, well, I guess two things. One is that Treasure Island, I believe, is going to end up being a privately owned and operated marina. That's number one. And number two, $1.9 million for a temporary or transient dock seems like a lot of loot. So can you just advise us or educate us on what's going on there?
I could touch on a few different parts of it, Commissioner. The private dock section, this is one of the few grant programs we have that is available for private entities. It doesn't necessarily need to be just for public entities. And the amount is higher than the normal tier two. It was awarded prior to Fish and Wildlife capping the awards at $1.5 million. This project dates back to 2012. It's a very old project that has been extended multiple times from Fish and Wildlife and from DBW. It is a massive project, and it got delayed multiple times due to Treasure Island needing to obtain certain leases and agreements prior to them being able to move forward. And if Debbie Holmes would also like to add to it, she worked on this project for a few years.
I think you covered it really well, Ethan. That's what was going to be my response to your question, Tom, is that project was awarded in 2012 prior to the cap. And so it is a lot of money. And I believe his entire, the Clipper Cove Marina is part of this huge endeavor. And the big dock is just one little tiny piece of that.
Well, that's kind of what caught my attention because, I mean, I'm not doing oversight of this program, but I do represent the interests of the voting public. So, I mean, I would think that $1.9 million gets you a heck of a lot of dock. And if this is just a transient dock and everyone else is applying in the $200,000 range, and if it's part of a larger marina build out, which they're doing at Clipper Cove, I'm not just quite getting why, where, and how all that money is going to. I mean, I guess that's an open question. Maybe Ethan, you and I can discuss it offline, but or Deborah, or the three of us. But, you know, I don't understand how that plays out. I understand where the revenue from the transient docking fees go to. You're obviously going to pay a nightly fee if you're going to stay there as a transient for 15 days. So I don't know. I mean, this is just like a federal handout. It's being administered by DBW. I mean, maybe that's one thing, and it's not our bag to worry about. I just don't know. So I don't know if there's a question in there or not, but maybe it's just sort of comment, public comment by a commissioner.
We can share the actual application that was submitted by Thai Enterprises and also the budget that came with that. I believe it's including engineering costs since it's brand new construction. It has a lot of components to go with it. But one thing I just will say, this was approved by the federal government, by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So it went through multiple layers of review before it was funded. Okay. Would you like us to share that with you offline? We can send you that.
Yeah, I would love to see. I would definitely be interested in seeing it.
Perfect. Yeah. Ethan, will you make a note to send the Treasure Island stuff to Commissioner Pierce?
Of course.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Any other commissioner questions or comments? And did you have any additional presentations, Ethan Tratner?
No, that'll be it for now. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. And next we have Amy Rigby with Aquatic Center Grants.
Good morning. My name is Amy Rigby, and I will be presenting a program update on DBW's Aquatic Center Grant Program. Next slide, please. DBW receives funding for this program from the Federal Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. The funding is administered by the U.S. Coast Guard, and DBW is required to follow federal and Coast Guard guidelines in granting these funds to aquatic centers. The program goal, as set by the Coast Guard, is to improve boating safety through education. So to best achieve this goal, DBW's Aquatic Center grant application requires applicants to identify specific safety issues on their local waterways and indicate how their boating safety courses are designed to improve these issues. Next slide, please. Eligible applicants must be one of the following: colleges and universities, cities, counties, or other public agencies, or nonprofit organizations with a 501c3 status. An agency must do the following things to be eligible for funding. They must have an existing boating safety and education program. They must provide on-the-water education. They need to teach boating safety skills, particularly how to safely operate a boat. And they must require that life jackets be worn when near the water or on the water. Next slide, please. Any activity that meets the definition of boating can qualify for funding as long as the stipulations mentioned in the last slide are met. So this includes the following: all types of paddle activities, including whitewater rafting or other whitewater sports, canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddleboard, and rowing. Power boating, including open motorboat education, water skiing, and personal watercraft. And then types of sailing activities, traditional sailing, windsurfing, and kite surfing. Funding categories are that equipment purchases include boats, engines, trailers, also non-permanent storage and non-permanent docking, boat parts like sails or other types of boat parts, and boating related supplies such as life jackets and radios. They can also apply for scholarships, for funding for scholarships, and those can be used to offset costs in boating safety courses given outright to participants to make the course more affordable. They can also be used for transportation costs to get course participants to a site if that's a stumbling block for some. Funding can be used for instructor training to have instructors complete courses, and then also boating events. An additional $2,000 is available each year to offset the cost of boating safety events that are available to the general public. So often these events will coincide with National Safe Boating Week. That's in the last week of May around Memorial Day, but some also will coincide with an agency's or an aquatic center's opening day, or maybe another local event that they're hoping to piggyback on. Next slide, please. So some funding restrictions. Again, we don't provide funding for permanent structures, but as I mentioned previously, they can apply for storage sheds or modular docking. Competitive activities, equipment used for competitive activities or programming surrounding competitive activities must be limited to 10% of the overall program use. And as it affects the grant money. And then also equipment for rental, using it for rentals is limited to 40% of the overall program use. Next slide, please. So the 2021-22 budget and impact, this last funding cycle, we granted just over $1.5 million in grant funding to 42 agencies. The maximum award was $62,000. And the average award was $36,500. There were 42,500 students trained, and 36% of the students who took boating safety courses at the centers that we funded were from underserved areas or underserved populations. Next slide, please. Some improvements and changes that we are undertaking in the program is that we're continuing to fine-tune our grant application to ensure that it's in line with Coast Guard funding objectives. Applications continue to be reviewed and scored by independent review team. We've been continuing to help grantees explore creative programming strategies in response to COVID-19 restrictions, such as some online programming and purchasing safety supplies and extra boats to reduce class sizes. And last year, we increased the total amount the applicants can request from $42,000 to $62,000 to account for cost increases and to provide additional funding to centers that serve more students. eligibility to apply for the additional 20,000 is based on total students served in the prior year. And some upcoming activities. The 22-23 grant application is scheduled to be open from early to mid-September through the end of October. That's our typical grant funding period, our application period. And each fall, we host two annual Aquatic Center Directors meetings, one for Northern California and one in Southern California. These meetings are a great way for centers to receive information and assistance from DBW and also to network with each other to explore new ideas and solutions for unique challenges. During the last 2 years, the meetings have been virtual, and we are still undecided whether the 2022 meetings will be virtual or in person. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation, and if you have any questions at this time, I will be happy to answer them.
Okay, Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
Chair Ehrman, I am seeing no public comments at this time.
And do we have any commissioners with questions or comments?
As always, and I'll be extraordinarily brief, Amy, I just want to commend the program for, I think it was 46,000 students that you educated in boating safety.
Correct.
Yeah, yes. I commend you very highly for that, and that loops back to the questions I had for Ramona earlier about fatalities and injuries and so forth. So that's all.
That's good. It's thank you for that. It's down a little bit since COVID, but we're happy it's up since 2020. So we hope to get back to our pre-COVID levels. Thanks.
Any other comments or questions from commissioners?
Yes, I have my hand.
Yes, go ahead.
Real quickly, Amy, as well, for the percentage on underserved student populations noted, what metric or guidelines or, you know, whatever the descriptor is, does the department use? Is it just like Title I? Is it the community park? I'm just curious, like what sets the guidelines?
Sure. Well, we use the state parks guideline, which so how it works is you have to be from a disadvantaged or defined as from a disadvantaged community with a median household income of less than 80% of the statewide average. That's one way. Secondly, you can be a disabled person or you can be a person who the program feels has restricted access to boating programming. So that's a little more open-ended, you know, but generally they have to, we ask them to report these numbers and they do the best that they can. Sometimes it's purely zip codes, like I mentioned with the first one. Sometimes it's just trying to, they might use school lunch. They might use various other mechanisms to identify students. When a school group comes from a school, they don't separate anybody out and say, okay, we just allow the whole group. We're not going to single anyone out. And they're pretty good about, they have a really good way that they integrate the students into, like if they're going to have a upstanding program so that nobody knows, you know, who's, you know, maybe received a scholarship, or like I said, they do the whole class, or sometimes it's like a boys and girls club who all come together and maybe some of the kids in that are or aren't needy. But yeah, so that's, does that help clarify?
Yeah, it does. And reason for my question is just to continue to assess how across the state through a lot of the grants, there's alignment right on supporting student populations. And if we're ever going to miss someone, it'd be helpful to know that, like, hey, we're not using this indicator or this other agency is using this indicator and it's helping. So it's that. And just to thank you, that's helpful. And then the other one, just quick one, not looking, if there's no definitive answer, please know that I'm not fishing for any. Just curiosity, do you have any sense of when it comes to like native or tribal entities, communities, whether they are engaged with this? Do they receive that? Do you have any sense of information around that?
I did just get a sometimes they come to some of the tribes have sent students as a group to some various aquatic centers. But recently a Hoopa tribe reached out to me up in Northern California and they were curious about the program. I've added them to my list and I wasn't sure if they were more interested in, sometimes aquatic center grants sounds like a pool. Mm-hmm. So I had reached out to them and was explaining, put them on the list anyway, because you never know and they have a lot of water bodies around them. So we're always looking for more people who want to engage in the program. But that's kind of how they've been engaged right now, or how we've had engagement.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Okay.
And did we have any more questions or comments from commissioners? So I'll just add, echo some of the comments. The amount of students being served is incredible. It's an incredible program. I also think the underserved population, I think it's incumbent on these departments to try to provide access to people who traditionally wouldn't get access to these programs. We also want to advocate for the kind of the next generation of people who will use the boating and waterway system. So I think that program is really important. It's really unfortunate to not have access to something simply because of economic or location reasons. I also wanted to ask, and I may have missed it, you talked about the grants for the universities. Does that apply to just the public ones, or can the private universities apply for these grants as well?
Private universities can apply. They just have to have a mechanism because the students at any university are considered to be members of the public, so they are eligible. But a lot of them do have, so the short answer to your question is yes, they can apply. And the just a slightly longer answer is some of them have mechanisms that they like when Stanford was part of the program, they aren't any longer. They had a community-based program where kids could come from economic areas around there that they actually had some that were lower economic, and they reached out to those communities. So that's kind of how we were funding them. But they could apply just for their own students too.
So Stanford was more like a conduit for people not necessarily attending the university, but people identified as potential participants in these programs?
Correct. They had a youth-based sailing program when they were part of the program. So that's what they did.
And also these aquatic areas, like I live near one, you said you don't fund like if they have a club or a competition team, that the grant's not really designed to fund their actual teams.
Correct. So if they're going to apply for something like sailboats and they want to, you know, they're going to do a big racing program, it can only be 10% of whatever they're doing is towards competition, because again, the goal of the program is to increase boating safety education at a lower level than that. I mean, not that you can't learn boating safety education in a higher level. There's competition accidents certainly and things like that, but it's supposed to be for more entry level, and we do have some more advanced, but not so much the competitive. That's the one of the Coast Guard mandates.
And did you have any other presentations today?
No, I do not.
Okay, I want to thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it. And thanks. Next we have Melissa Miranda with Safety Boating Education and Outreach Programs. She's on mute.
Bob and AGP, we're having trouble hearing the video.
Apologies, we did test this before. It worked a minute ago. Interpretation and Education Division, but we support the mission and functions of the Division of Boating and Waterways. Throughout this presentation, you'll hear unique ideas, partnerships, and strategies that have come from this structure that have mutually benefited both divisions. Before we get started, let's meet the faces behind all of this hard work. So first we have Evan, who handles all the behind the scenes work for the California Boater Card, including contracts, social media, and managing boating safety course providers approved for the California Boater Card. Next we have Dan. He manages all things DBW Boating Safety Course and is the voice behind customer support for this program. Next, we have Christy, who makes sure the California Boater Card applications are processed in a timely manner. And she also reviews boating safety courses for outside from outside vendors to ensure compliance with the California specific content. And last but not least, we have Sarah, our newest team member, who manages our boating safety outreach program, youth education, life jacket programs, and more. Sarah comes to us with a unique and impressive background in water safety. She's a former California State Parks lifeguard, and she's even trained in Swiftwater Rescue. She brings innovative and fresh ideas to our program, and we are so excited to have her on board. Today, I'll be providing you with updates on the following programs: California Boater Card, Boating Safety Course, Youth Education, Outreach, and Life Jacket Programs. We will be happy to answer any of your questions following the presentation. For the California Boater Card Program, we're currently in our fifth year of the phase-in process. As of January 1st of this year, all boaters 45 years and younger are required to carry the card while operating a motorized vessel on California waterways. By 2025, all operators of a motorized vessel will be required to carry the card. This graph shows boater card activity for the previous fiscal year, 2020-2021. The green bar represents applications submitted, and then the blue bar represents cards issued. This overlay shows applications received and cards issued for fiscal year 2021-2022. Over the last reporting period, we received 45,000 applications and issued 35,000 California voter cards. To date, we have received over 195,000 applications and issued 153,000 cards. You'll notice a slight dip in our numbers from the previous reporting period until we get to May of this year. This is when we switched our marketing strategy to focus on Google search ads. And since then, we've seen a significant increase in applications. What are Google search ads? It's where you type in California Boater Card in the search bar, and then we come up as the number one choice in the results. So as with any marketing campaign, sometimes we have to refocus our strategy to optimize our reach. We take a comprehensive approach to marketing, advertising, and outreach for the California Boater Card. Due to COVID-19, all large-scale boat shows and outdoor shows have remained canceled to date, but we anticipate those coming back this next year. We have started participating in some outdoor events, like the California State Fair. With the help of our advertising agency, Uncommon, we advertise through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Google search ads, like I just mentioned. We place digital ads online, as well as print ads in magazines and publications. We have marina posters that are strategically placed at launch ramps and boating facilities throughout the state. We also work with local law enforcement to educate boaters. And as I shared just a bit ago, in May of 2022, we started focusing our advertising spend on those Google search ads, and we've seen the most significant increase in applications from this method of outreach. This has proved to be the best return on investment for this program. DBW provides a free basic boating safety course that meets education requirements for the California Boater Card Program. The DBW Boating Safety Course was revised last year to include updated information that was approved by the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, NASLA, for the next 3 years. We're moving away from distributing hard copy courses to directing boaters to the online ebook. Instructions on how to order the answer sheets can be found on our website. A Spanish translation is underway for the DBW course, and it's in the final review process with our contractor and will be submitted to NASLA in the near future. Now, DBW also reviews courses from outside course providers to ensure compliance with state-specific content, and we maintain a list of approved courses for the California Boater Card Program. We continue to offer our AquaSmart curriculum and performance series to reach our youth audience. The Aquifer Activity Book is available for use by instructors, boating safety partners, and the general boating public. Our AquaSmart Live puppet show for K-3 and then the game show for 4th through 6th grade are now offered both as virtual or in-person performances. Because of this, we've increased access, especially to the more rural areas of the state. And we are pleased to also offer AquaSmart Live in Spanish. This past reporting period, AquaSmart Live reached an estimated 54,000 California students. The show was also performed live at Millerton Lake and the LA Best School Summer Program put on by the Los Angeles Unified School District that reached about 7,000 students. Here's a quick snippet of the game show so you can see the positive energy that this show brings to our older youth audience.
What should you always wear to keep yourself safe whenever you are in or around the water? Is it A, a life jacket, B, a helmet, C, a bathing suit, or D, a swimming cap? Answer now.
All right. So for outreach, this year we've been focusing on taking boating safety to a new level by utilizing different media tools to reach the public. We've kept our focus on our established online platforms to engage the boating demographic. Through online outreach, we've been able to geo-target boaters to ensure we're maximizing our reach. We went virtual for National Safe Boating Week, which included new digital content each day for clean and safe boating. We partnered with the U.S. Coast Guard to host a Facebook Live kickoff event. We hosted hashtag Wear Your Life Jacket to Work Day, and we had daily boating safety tips posted on our social media threads. For the first time since the pandemic started, we've begun participating at in-person events, including the Dana Point Whale Festival, Women's Sailing Convention, Elk Grove Regional Safety Day, the California State Fair, and some other local safety fairs. We also partnered with Vivian Matuk, who you'll hear from next, to create the new Dockside podcast. Over the past reporting period, we created original engaging content on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I received over 54 million impressions and 119,000 website clicks. Check out this video for a sample of what we've been up to.
The best way to enjoy summer is to spend it with your family and friends exploring California's beautiful waterways. Let's make sure to save the ones we love by following these summer boating safety tips. 1. All children under 13 are required to wear a life jacket while on a moving vessel. Paddle sports are considered vessels and also require boaters to follow life jacket laws. Make sure you and all children on board are wearing properly fitted life jackets that are U.S. Coast Guard approved. 2. Make sure all adults and children know how to swim. Enroll your child in swim lessons so that they can learn how to swim and float on their own. 3. Let your child spend some time getting used to their life jacket. Let them play in the water so they can learn how it works. 4. Always have a designated water watcher on shore. The water watcher must always watch the children regardless of their ability to swim while in or near the water. Make sure that there are no distractions. Don't talk with others, text, read, or drink alcohol. Be aware of the weather, currents, wave conditions, and make sure that all children and adults know how to swim. 5. Be prepared for an emergency. Have a plan in place if something were to go wrong. Always know the name and address of your location. Have a phone near you to call 911 in case of an emergency and get CPR certified if you aren't already. Thanks for joining us for our summer safety tips. Remember, save the ones you love. Life jackets save lives.
Love that. So we use life jackets as an educational tool to promote safe boating and as an opportunity to teach proper fit and use. Over the past year, we distributed 5,500 life jackets to California boaters through Boating Safety Partners. We partner with over 50 local marine law enforcement and also some fire agencies to provide life jackets for educational use by public safety personnel. Uses for the life jackets varied by agency, but included trade-ins and other outreach methods for distribution. This partnership is mutually beneficial for positive outreach and education on safe boating and water recreation. We currently help provide resources, including life jackets and signage, to more than 115 life jacket loaner stations throughout the state. We're proud to partner with boating safety partners such as marinas, fire departments, and the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Each life jacket loaner station is operated by independent partner organizations who ensure they're stocked with life jackets that are in serviceable condition. A newer component to the life jacket loaner program is the availability of loan station kits that include all materials needed to assemble a standalone loaner board, such as lumber, hardware, and signage. And those kits are available to order from our unit. Our branded signage is double-sided with messaging, one side in English and the other side in Spanish, as you see here in this video. The goal of this program is to provide access to all to ensure a safe and fun time out on the water. In 2022, we added 5 new life jacket loaner stations, which included Lake Paris, City of Lodi, South Yuba River State Recreation Area, Silverwood State Recreation Area, and we hope to keep adding to this list of loan stations and expand access to these life-saving resources. So how do you find a life jacket loaner station? Well, you can visit our website or find it on the Boat California app. I'll show you here on our website. So you're going to scroll down to this Wear It logo. And then it's going to pull up our life jacket page. A couple different ways you can get there, but there's this life jacket loaner programs on related pages. And it's going to give you the list of all the counties where we have life jackets. And then we'll just go ahead and click on a random county here. And then it pulls up the location that the life jacket loaner station is. And there's a contact number so you can reach out before heading over there just to make sure that they do have those resources available. So we're proud of the hard work that our team continues to put in. And I believe our awesome results speak for themselves. Thank you so much for your time today, and please let us know if you have any questions.
Okay, Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I am seeing no hands raised.
Any commissioners with questions or comments?
Chair, I have my hand up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for that presentation. I was curious, so through the whole network that you work for access, you know, providing access to life jackets, it says loaner, but it's basically a free, is it generally a free access, right? That if a family or kids go up, they either check in with someone or they can just take it with the understanding that they put it back, kind of? Is that kind of generally how it works?
Yeah, so each life jacket loaner station is operated by an independent partner. And so the process for check-in, check-out might be different. I showed you mostly the life jacket loaner boards. So those are, managed and checked by the partners. And so that's, on the good faith expectation that you take it and then put it back. There is some loss of life jackets there, and we help replenish those. Each year we try and reach out to all of our different partner organizations and see what they're in need of. Because we want to make sure they have all of the resources they need. There are some that are operated like inside of a marina or something like that, where they could have you show an ID or something like that. But this program is free. So we provide the life jackets for free for the organizations, and then the life jackets should be free for check-in, check-out.
Okay, thank you. And the reason I ask is that knowing you are working with such a varied, network of partners, I can understand variability. Like you say, in some cases, it might ask you to show ID card. In some cases, it's just kind of there. I trust that the variability isn't wide enough that, of course, it impedes access. My last question is, are you generally getting good feedback from the partners saying, hey, this works, it's easy, or there's no concerns with anybody saying, or like you said, to the loss is too great, or it's requiring more of us than it is? I want to be an understanding that's great, because I benefit from the one here in the Sacramento River, and I can see how much of an impact it makes to just know that it is accessible and supporting the community to be able to have that, because of course the alternative is not ideal.
Absolutely. Yes, we have only received positive feedback. And of course, if we received anything other than that, we would evaluate the circumstance. It's important to note that some of those, like at the Sacramento River, Sacramento County operates some of those Life Jacket Loaner Boards. But sometimes we do partner with them to provide resources, and then we work with partner organizations like DART, the Drowning Accident Rescue Team. And so there's a mix of how they're receiving resources and things like that. Sometimes the messaging is their own, which is great. I'd love to see a unified messaging. And that's something I work toward, and we've had many discussions over the years, and so hopefully at some point we can have a unified campaign, just so statewide voters would and water enthusiasts would be able to recognize our messaging throughout the state. So hope that helps answer your question. Great, thank you,
Commissioner Hawkins, our Vice Chair Hawkins.
Thank you, Chair Ehrman. Melissa, I just, again, applaud the number of reaching 54,000 youth engagement on the program. Again, what we see is usually the youth take ownership and accountability with their family members on safety, and we see that in other capacities. So I really, I love to hear that the program is still doing well and thriving coming out of COVID with a hybrid model of virtual and in-person and virtual meeting. You know, some of the rural communities, which again, I live in a rural community, so thank you. And then I'll just underscore what Commissioner Gonzalez said about the life jacket program. This is critical. And again, I too see the firsthand, like the importance of this and the accessibility of, you know, people being able to have these at no cost and to be able to use them because it is saving lives. So again, if there's opportunities to talk about program funding for more than just like five a year, like I, you know, potentially, you know, 50 to 100. I mean, I know that's a little ambitious, but I mean, we do know the value in this and it does serve our mission. So those are my comments, but again, great work and a great update. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Tom, I saw you had your hand up. Did you have a question or comment?
Well, yeah, it's kind of peripheral to the life jacket program. I'm just was just generally curious, Melissa, what's the enforcement mechanism for the California boating card? So you get a ticket, who issues the ticket? It's a state law, but I'd imagine most water safety patrols are at a county level. If I'm on the San Francisco Bay, who's giving me maybe you can just give that to me really quick. Because it seems to me that's like, the way to get people to get a boating card is start issuing tickets, right? If you don't have one, right? Decide, which is maybe this is a better question for Kenneth. I don't know.
Yeah, I can take a stab at helping answer that for you. But so when we first started this program, it was more, we were encouraging education because it was a new program. And now we've worked with some law enforcement, our local law enforcement, to encourage enforcement of the program. And our messaging has moved from a lighter tone more to a stern, this is the law, and you could receive a fine if you don't have the card. So, and just to clarify how the fine process would work, the boaters aren't checked before they head out on the water. This would be a secondary, similar to a driver's license in a car. Like, you're not gonna get pulled over to check to see if you have a license for your car. So this would be something they would check if they were doing some other kind of stop. So that's maybe one of the misconceptions of the program. But yeah, we definitely wanna see more people getting their voter card, and we're working toward that goal.
Yeah.
Hope that helped answer
your question. I appreciate that you're moving more to a stern message, like you, this is, you know, this is educational, but you need to have it, right? And akin to, as you reference, a driver's license, right? You know,
right.
You drive without a license, you get a ticket or whatever. So, okay, that's, I was just, you satisfied my curiosity. Thank you.
Okay, of course. It's a tread lightly situation. You want to be stern, but also it is an education program and we want voters to want to do this, but also it is the law.
So I'll just mention, I think the boating card program, it's important in a lot of ways too. Like I registered and got the card, I don't even have a boat, but I thought it was very educational. I learned a lot about boating safety. And I think if anybody's curious in the slightest bit, even if it's because they get on a boat for 2 days, it's very educational. I thought that a lot of fundamental things about boating that I didn't have any idea about. And it's not like it's difficult. If the program's set up, so if you really put in the time and, you know, the concentration, you'll get your boating card. So I thought it's really important. I thought it's well done.
Thank you. The goal is to get boaters educated, and we just hope to make that an easy process for everyone.
Okay, well, we thank you for your presentation.
Sorry, Chair, do you mind if I ask?
Yes, sir.
Hopefully it comes with a bit of humor, Melissa. and maybe it speaks to your challenge about unified messaging. Do we have a hashtag?
We have multiple hashtags. We don't use a consistent hashtag right now.
Do you have a preferred one?
Well, you can check out. So have you visited the Boat California social media site?
Yes, I want to actively support tweeting and Instagram.
Oh, fantastic. So there are various ones that we've used in the past. So and maybe Vivian has something to add to that too. But we don't have a specific safety one that we use every single time. And that's something we've done, like I said, in the past, but not now. But thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Commissioner, do you mind educating me on what a hashtag is? I'm totally unclear on that concept.
No, of course.
That's a joke. I get it. That's an old guy joke.
Well, I was going to say it's an updated version of the pound tag, probably the old. No, I get you.
I didn't get that one either.
No, I and thank you. I look forward to in the future because I didn't want to take too much time today about kind of the whole social media strategy campaign, what additional support you could get, what you're finding is working, not working, and so forth, since that's something that interests me in terms of supporting the overall communications.
Thank you very much.
Again, thank you for your report. And we'll move on to Vivian Matuk, Boating Clean and Green Programs.
Chairman, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just realized we actually do have a comment from the public.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and unmute them. Jeff, and I'm sorry, if I pronounced your last name wrong. Jeff Salisbury, you should be unmuted.
Thank you, Megan. Can you hear me? I'm not sure if you can see me, but you can maybe hear me.
We can hear you.
So first of all, thank you, Melissa, for that, for the hard work in education and for the hard work you guys all did to get that passed. We really appreciate it as a longtime boater and friend of lots of boaters. Two questions. The first one is the fines are pretty minimal. I think it's $100 the first fine, and then it's $200, and then it's $500 the third. So it's pretty minimal. I mean, if you can afford to get your boat on the water, you can probably afford $100 to pay the fine. So first question is, what directives or suggestions has the department given to local law enforcement, lifeguards, in terms of enforcement? Sometimes there's sort of a directive that is, hey, for now, guys, just warn people, really don't fine unless you think you need to. But starting this date, we'd like you to step it up. Sometimes there's, hey, we want you to go out and start giving tickets right away so we get the message out. What directive has the department, what messaging have we sent to law enforcement on this? Or what are they supposed to be doing at this point?
So
that's for Melissa.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to answer while you're
answer that one. I'll give you the next question.
This is Catherine Tobias, legal counsel. I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, just the putting that information out, so if you could kind of rephrase your question,
okay,
you know, that would be great. But otherwise, it kind of puts out our enforcement.
I understand. I have to think of a different way to phrase that then, and I'm not sure I know how.
Thank you, Catherine.
Sure.
Well, here's a twist on that. What has there been any budget dollars for additional dollars for enforcement for local enforcement?
Much better question. Thanks.
Yeah.
Not specific to this program.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, You know, this is a comment. One of the suggestions I might have is to have agencies temporarily increase their budgets for, holiday weekends, things like that, to have agents out for education, maybe checking voter cards at the launch ramps. And maybe the first big weekend would just be warnings, no fines. Just sort of, hey, did you know you have to have this? And here's where you get more information. I know we do a lot of social media stuff, but a lot of, you know, there are a fair amount of voters, I'm sure, who don't utilize social media, who may speak different languages, and they may need something in different languages, maybe a handout, just a suggestion, just to get more education out there at the launch ramps where people are launching their boats. So that's a suggestion. I'd still like to have that first question answered, but I completely understand from a legal standpoint why we don't want to touch it. But just stuff to think about, I guess. Thank you.
And do we have anybody else registered, Megan?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I am seeing no other hands raised.
Okay, so now again, we'll move on to Vivian Matuk with Voting Clean and Green Programs.
Good morning and happy Thursday, commissioners. My name is Vivian Matuk. I'm the Environmental Boating Program Manager for both the California State Parks and the California Coastal Commission. I manage the California Boating Clean and Green Program, which is a statewide boater education and technical assistance program led by our agency, but implemented in partnership with the commission. Our main funding source comes from Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. The commission contributes also to the program. Currently, the program is with Interpretation and Education Division, but supports DBW's goals and missions. And this is a result of our reorganization. Throughout this presentation, you will hear examples on the benefit of both divisions working together. We serve on an annual basis over 10,000 boaters and water enthusiasts. The Boating Clean and Green program has only one staff, which is my person, and I partner with many organizations and some of our colleagues within the division to implement the program. We have four main components, which include research, networking, technical assistance, and education and outreach. In terms of education and outreach, during this reporting period, we continue with our Dock Walker program. Dock Walkers are environmental educators trained by our program and our program partners to conduct face-to-face boater education about clean and safe boating practices. In other words, in order to increase clean boating practices across the state. Most of our Dock Walkers are members from the Coast Guard Auxiliary, Power Squadrons, Boating Facility Operators, boaters, nonprofits, who become environmental educators by attending one of our three trainings. This year, we conducted 13 virtual trainings and one in-person training, working with over 170 partner Dock Walkers. During the trainings, we talk about the importance of boating in California, also potential sources of boat pollution, federal and state laws that are related to those potential sources of boat pollution, and also best management practices dock walkers can share with boaters to increase their clean boating practices. In addition, during the training, we study our main outreach tool, which is the California Boater Kit that you can see in this slide, which was developed based on research and input provided by our technical advisory group comprised of members with the marina industry and boating associations. In other words, the experts. This is a comprehensive clean and safe boating packet that includes, for example, our ABCs of boating law, a brochure that summarizes the state and federal laws related to potential sources of boat pollution. We also include three pollution prevention tools, as you can see in this slide, for example, the fuel bib, the oil absorbent pillow, the oil absorbent sheet. We teach our partner dock walkers about how to use them, how to properly dispose of them, so then they can go out and share that information with boaters and also explain to them how to properly dispose of these pollution prevention tools. This year, we were able to distribute over 4,000 boater kits across the state. We also have in the voter kit a bilingual quick reference card that is to keep pollutants out of the water, one side in English, one side in Spanish, where we include best management practices and important phone numbers, for example, on how to report an oil spill, sewage spill, among others. There are other components of the program, including our questionnaire that is also in Spanish. Once our partner dog walkers or environmental educators are trained, then they go out and meet boaters wherever they are, not necessarily by walking marinas, but they can participate at fishing events, boat events. Also, they go to boat launch ramps, fuel docks, talk to boaters about clean and safe boating practices, distribute the boater kit with education, and also collect from every boater kit recipient a questionnaire that helps us to better orient our education and outreach effort. This map shows where boaters live who have learned about clean boating information from partner dog walkers and staff in 2021. As you can see, it's a geographically diverse map. The program is implemented in partnership with many organizations. In Southern California, we mainly partner with the Bay Foundation, which is also one of our Clean Vessel Act education and outreach grantees. We also work with the Coast Guard, Power Squadron, many marina and yacht club associations, among others. Let's hear directly from one of our dock walkers about this program.
My name is Lawrence, and I'm a member of the Coast Guard Auxiliary here in Alameda. And I'm also a dock walker. One of the services the Coast Guard Auxiliary offers is a voluntary boat inspection to help the boating community be prepared for the safe operation of their watercraft. I find that the information I'm able to share as a dock walker greatly complements the auxiliary program. We're able to share with the boating community excellent facts and methods one can use in order to help us keep the environment clean and safe for all of us. How best to fill your fuel tanks, how to dispose of your used oil and other contaminants, and how and where to empty your holding tanks. We distribute these boater kits, which contain valuable tools and information. We discuss the contents with the boater and collect surveys, which allow us to evaluate our impact. I have found that most people are aware of the potential problems associated with boating, but many are not certain what the solutions are. I thoroughly enjoy talking to boaters about boating, and being a dock walker is very rewarding.
Staff also work on different components of the program. For example, during the reporting period, we conducted 14 boating webinars and one educational meeting promoting clean and safe boating information, reaching over to 160 participants. We continue with our virtual education and outreach campaign, partnering with DBW's Education and Safety Unit, as Melissa reported before. We also work with one of our Clean Vessel Act grantees up here in Northern California, the San Francisco Estuary Partnership, where we develop 8 2-minute short videos promoting clean and safe boating practices. Since April this year till this month, all those videos have reached over 130,000 views. Last year, from August to September, we launched our online Clean and Green quiz, one question per week. As an incentive, we were offering the California Boater Kit for randomly selected winners. The purpose of these quiz is to challenge recreational boaters to test their clean and green knowledge about preventive practices related to oil, sewage, marine debris, among others. Our 5-week goal for 2021 was 4,000, and we successfully reached it, exceeding it to a total of 4,200 quiz completions. This map shows where boaters live who participated in the 2021 online Clean and Green boating quiz, which again is another geographically diverse map. Here, I wanted to share with you some of the feedback we received from some of the quiz participants. Some of them, as you can see here, have been boating for many years, but didn't know a lot of the information that they learned through the quiz. And some of them felt the quiz was very educational, informative, and a fun way to learn and refresh their memories about this information. Another component of our California Clean Boating Program is the California Fishing Line Recycling Program. This year, we expanded the program from the reporting number of stations we had in last year of 328 to 360 fishing line recycling stations across the state. Not only at points of entry to our beautiful waterways throughout the state, but also, for example, at fishing piers, boat launch ramps, marinas, harbors, among others. Since we started this program back in 2011, we have been able to collect and properly recycle over 3,000 pounds of fishing line. Stretched out, that line will stretch from San Francisco to La Paz, Bolivia. Just to give you an idea, just this year alone, we were able to collect and properly recycle over 580 pounds of fishing line. Probably, commissioners, you're asking yourself, and what do you do with the recycling line? Good question. Basically, that line gets recycled into other products, including benches, fishing boxes, fishing spools. So it's a great way of giving many, many lives to that recycled fishing line. As Melissa mentioned in her presentation, we had the opportunity to work with her unit as well as our San Francisco Estuary Partnership grantee from the Clean Vessel Act program here in Northern California. And we launched a new education and outreach tool, the podcast entitled The Dock Side. The purpose of this particular new education and outreach tool aims to showcase several topics that promote clean and safe boating practices. Since April, we have launched 4 episodes. Altogether have been downloaded over 640 times. And commissioners, I want all of you this afternoon, after your lunch break, to take the opportunity to listen to all of our 4 episodes. They are pretty diverse, different topics, and they can be listened on your favorite platform, including Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, among others. In terms of technical assistance, which is another component of the program, as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, we partner with our DBW Aquatic Invasive Species Prevention Unit, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as the Sea Grant Extension Program. And we conducted 3 educational workshops about invasive species prevention. We had 150 participants. For us, it's very important to continue to improve these educational workshops. So every time we have any of these programs for the public, we conduct evaluation forms, and they were all rated as excellent. As you may remember, last year we had a bad spill, October 2021, unfortunately, in San Diego and Orange County. Staff was able to work with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Office of Spill Prevention and Response and the Coast Guard as part of the Unified Command in terms of communicating with boating facilities, with the boating population down there and water enthusiasts about the spill status, also the vessel decontamination procedures and the spill protocol. This is a successful partnership, I would say, thanks to the work we have been doing with those agencies for the last few years in order to increase communication capabilities between the Unified Command and the boating facilities in case of a spill. We also work with the Bay Foundation and the Clean Water Act program, implementing the Rethink Disposable program in 3 Los Angeles County yacht clubs, thanks to the success we have here up in Northern California. The purpose of this particular program is to reduce the single-use disposables and the food packaging from the yacht club operation. Thanks to this program, we were able to swap single-use disposables with reusable food and beverageware, eliminating over 58,000 single-use disposable items from these yacht clubs, and also preventing more than 840 pounds of trash from entering the landfills. This brings us to another important marine debris component of the program. As you all know, the largest volunteer event is Coastal Cleanup Day. Even though it's called Coastal Cleanup Day, it happens across the entire state and is led in California by the California Coastal Commission. our program partners with boating facilities and boating groups across the state in order to participate in this program. Last year, again, the boating facility, with no exception, had a lot of energy and enthusiasm to participate in this event. We had over 41 boating facilities and boating groups that participated in 2021 Coastal Cleanup Day, bringing over 1,200 volunteers who help us removing more than 18,000 pounds of trash and recyclables. Just to give you an idea of the statewide program, last year there were over 36,000 volunteers participating in this event who helped us removing over 363,000 pounds of trash and recyclables. And I want to invite all of you to please mark your calendar. Coastal Cleanup Day is around the corner. It will be on Saturday, September 17. You can go to our program or the commission website, which is coast4u.org, and you can find the nearest site where you can go and participate in this fantastic event. Finally, to conclude my presentation, I also want to tell you that I had the pleasure of working with Karen Deal, Debbie Holmes, and Ethan Trayton implementing the California Clean Vessel Act Education and Outreach Program, managing our two grantees that you heard me talking about them during the presentation. That pretty much concludes my presentation. Thank you so much for your attention.
And it's time for public comment. Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I'm seeing no hands raised. I would just like to remind the public, if you are dialing in by phone, it is star 9 to use that raise hand feature. But Mr. Chair, I see no public comments at this time.
Public comment, are comments or questions from commissioners?
I did have one, Mr. Chair.
Good.
Thank you, Vivian, for an excellent presentation. I was a recipient of one of your kits that you sent to the commissioners, and I found it to be very useful. And I sort of understand your distribution model to rely on sort of a more person-to-person model, right? So you want to like meet a boater and say, here's your kit. It also seems to me that the kit I received, it was almost like a sample package of commercial products, right? So to my way of looking at it, that those products are free for the division, right? Maybe the division assembles them into a product. No, I have that wrong.
Yes, sir. Let me explain to you. Thank you. And I'm glad that you enjoy the boater kit. Two things. Based on our research, we have identified a couple of areas where we can assist the boating community to prevent pollution from getting into the water. One of the best ways is to always practice preventive engine maintenance by regularly inspecting their boat, the engine, making sure that the parts are properly changed with the correct parts when needed. And also the cheapest way to control pollution is also by always carrying an oil absorbent. Oil absorbents comes in many, many shapes in the market, including what we call a sock that is like a sausage. And that's for deep compartments. Yes, you receive two. One is the outside of the boater kit, which is an oil absorbent sheet. Some people call them the diaper. And also you receive the oil absorbent pillow. We decided to include those two because a lot of boaters still don't know about this cheapest way to control pollution. So we do, as part of our budget, we put together these boater kits on an annual basis because we understand that is a very good way to promote ways to prevent pollution from getting into the water. In addition to that, we include the fuel bib, as you probably may remember, also because, as you know, there are so many opportunities. Unfortunately, the way the boats are designed, the fueling system for a boater to have a spill. So we want to make sure that as part of this education, we always approach the boater with something that we can give to them so then they can rely on those items to continue as part of their checklist from now on after they had the conversation with the dock walker and receive the boater kit to continue as part of their operation to use those pollution prevention tools. So yes, we go out and we buy that. And in addition to that, at the end of every annual or at the end of the boating season, if we can say that Southern California has at the end, but we try to survey every single boater that receives the boater kit. We ask them for every single item included in the boater kit just to get also as part of our research feedback about what we need to change, et cetera. They always score as the best items, the pollution prevention tools, because a lot of them don't know about them. So they learn a lot and they feel empowered to then continue as part of their clean boating practice to continue to utilize some of those items.
So let me just, I'm going to put a slightly finer point on it. So the division purchases the products that go into the kit.
Yes, okay, sir.
Those are not commercial samples.
No, sir. No, sir. So I have to follow the procurement process. And also, as probably you know or don't know, these items not only help the boater to prevent a spill from happening in the water, but we also tell them accidents happen. If there's a spill, those items they are receiving are approved by the state to be used in a state waters in case of a spill happens. So, for example, we work really closely, as you heard me during the presentation, with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response. The state is very strict about what items can be placed on the water if there's a spill. So these items that you receive in your boater kit are inert. What is the meaning of that? If I have a spill, as you probably saw in my Orange County photos, those oil absorbent sheets or diapers can be put on the water like the pillow. They don't generate any chemical reaction. That's why, because they are inert, they are just absorbing the oil, repelling the water. So they are approved to be used in state waters in case of a spill happens. So we're very careful with the products we shared as a sample with the boater as part of our education. One thing that I also wanted to highlight is you made a very good point. For us, the face-to-face education is pretty important because once these absorbents are utilized, they cannot be placed in the trash because they are considered or presumed under California law to be hazardous waste. So we don't want people, of course, to put them in the trash because of many, many reasons. We teach the boaters what sources at local level they have in order to properly dispose of them. So in the training, depending on where you are, we have tide books, we have maps to show them, for example, the services a marina offers in their neighborhood, or also to go to their county household hazardous waste collection center, how to identify them. So we close the loop. We don't only give them something, but also we want them to continue to be part of that a behavior change, to be part of those absorbents they use on a regular basis.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, I was driving at it as if the product, the division's receiving the product for free as a sample, and you've now educated me that's not the case. I was thinking a more mass distribution model of just sort of walking down the dock and throwing these things on people's deck. But you've explored that option, and that's not viable. So I appreciate that. I mean, I'm taking everyone's time as always, but if you want to comment, of course.
No, that's totally fine. We also, as you heard me, we do a lot of research. So we want boaters to value our boater kit. So that's why they are required to respond to the questionnaire. Immediately, we give them feedback about their response. And immediately, we bring the boater kit as part of the education. So it's a very comprehensive approach, what our environmental educators, or when I go to events, do with the boater. We really require a little bit of, hey, let's talk a little bit about this. And it's a fantastic opportunity to really have the one-on-one. However, we also do what we call massive dock walking, which is we go to yacht clubs or to boating events and give presentations and distribute the boater kit. So I can report to you that this Saturday we're going to be participating at the Delta Duda. Your Commissioner Pierre, you are here up in the Delta. You know that is a pretty famous event. So we're going to go there, present, distribute the boater kit, give a clean boating presentation with our CVA program as well, and give the full packet of the experience.
I'll be bringing a case of beer to that. Okay, I'm done. Thank you. Thank you very much for your responses.
My pleasure.
So I just have a couple comments. I live relatively close to two harbors, and we spend a tremendous amount of time at the beach, and there's really nothing more disturbing than seeing litter accumulating in our pristine waterways. And I applaud the coastal cleanup in a lot of ways, because one, It provides a way to take ownership in your community. When people come out and pick up trash, they have a better idea of what happens when you, I've seen people just throwing garbage off their boats when they're docked in the harbor. And I also think it's very interesting to see the amount of trash that's collected during these events. I think people have no idea how much just all kinds of items, tires and other things get thrown off of these boats. So I applaud that effort. It's extremely important, but I think it also opens a lot of people's eyes to the effects of not properly disposing of your garbage near the waterways. So for that, I thank you for your presentation today.
Yeah, no problem. I wanted just to make a final comment just to wrap up your amazing comment. Yes, when we work with a lot of the boating facilities and they are like, we want to participate in Costa Cleanup Day, but I don't think people are going to find any trash here because, you know, our boating facilities are in very good shape. But it's fascinating when we tell them, look really closely, there's a lot of microplastic, you know, a lot of tiny particles just there, or cigarette butts or stuff like that. And the event is so powerful because thanks to the data collection that the public is helping to collect as part of this event is how some of the legislation has been moved forward, including the single plastic bag bans, the styrofoam, among others. So it's a very good citizen science event as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So at this time, we'll hear from public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. After hearing all public comments, we'll continue the meeting with the agenda item number 10 on administrative items. And with that, Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing any hands raised. Just going to give folks a few seconds here. Once again, that is star 9 to raise your hand if you're dialing in by phone. So I don't know if we have anyone dialing in by phone. Mr. Chair, I am seeing no comments at this time.
Okay, I guess with that, I will move forward with closing public comments. And we will move on to administrative items. And if Deputy Director Ramona, did you want to speak to the MRA conference?
Sure, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to remind everyone the MRA, the Marine Recreation Association's annual conference is going to be in Bakersfield in October, not Bakersfield, I'm sorry, Santa Barbara. In October, a big difference there for Bakersfield to Santa Barbara, but Santa Barbara in October. And we were hoping to kind of coordinate the November meeting with the conference, but we do have a project that we need to present to the commission in Long Beach in November. So we're gonna resume with that Long Beach November meeting tour in meeting. Hopefully, I think we're anticipating a hybrid type meeting. And then we're offering, as we did last year, if any commissioners are wanting to participate or attend the conference in Santa Barbara, to let us know we'll move forward with the approval process on that. Karen Dill and I will be at the conference. Again, we are, Boating and Waterways is presenting, will be a presenter at the conference this year. So we welcome, you know, your participation with the commission and join us at that conference.
Ramona, do you have a date in October?
Megan, do you have those dates?
Yes, so the conference is October 18th through the 20th. I'm waiting on confirmation from Marianne Timms on when the final day is to register. So once I have that date, I will definitely update you if there are still some commissioners who, you know, have found out that they can attend and would like to.
This is probably a question for Catherine, but so do we have like some kind of Jones Act issue? Well, not Jones, that's maritime law. What's the Public Meetings Act? Do we have some kind of issue there, or how does that work?
It's Bagley-Keene, and there's no problem with you attending a conference that everybody else is attending. So as long as it's an open public meeting, there's no issue for you. So it's fine to attend that.
Thank you.
Director Fernandez, I forget which day will the boating waterways be presenting?
Do we have that agenda, Megan?
We don't have the agenda yet, but I believe it will be the 19th, so that second day, which I believe is a Wednesday. That's what I remember Marianne saying. Again, I'll just, you know, triple confirm that, but pretty sure it is the Wednesday, the 19th.
I see no other administrative items, so we'll move on. Any suggestions for agenda items for our next meeting in November from the commissioners?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, I guess my question is, I kind of feel like I was premature in the presentation of my subcommittee's findings / recommendations. How would you like to proceed on that front? I'm sort of understanding that I was slightly ahead of the curve and I didn't mean to jump the gun, and I kind of feel like I did. What's our process moving forward with this subcommittee reports? Frankly, to be quite candid, I'm not getting it. I mean, what's kind of the process moving forward here to sort of, do we have an open discussion? I mean, how's it all work?
So the committee thinks you have your deliverables, you've reached a consensus or a conclusion on the items you wanted to address?
I think that my subcommittee is finished. I mean, but like I say, I think I prematurely presented it. Perhaps that was not what you were expecting or what your expectation was, that, you know, that's what I'm trying to understand where we all are on the whole thing.
Commissioner,
so I would ask, I was going to defer to you.
Can I intervene here? So Commissioner Peer, you weren't. So I just wanted.
I was premature.
No, you were not. So I just kind of wanted to update or provide some more contents of the process here. And I believe we discussed this before, and if not, I do apologize. But the timeline here is, we'd hope that the committees now within this next several months will provide their recommendations and come to a conclusion to provide recommendations moving forward. We may and have to have an additional meeting if you all choose to kind of finalize that process, because what'll happen is we will then, the division will get the recommendations from the commission. The division is planning on meeting actually next week, just kind of to summarize and look at potentially the recommendation that was moved forward with this one subcommittee, but not only that, but other similar enhancements of programs, or as was discussed in some of the subcommittees, discussions of what that could look like. So we want to kind of take a deeper dive in that. We're going to initially look at the data that we hopefully will have from our budget office on our fund condition, and then kind of go from there of what, you know, where we can potentially start looking at what a proposal would look like. We do have to have that proposal in by the end of this year, which would then go in line with the beginning of January for the, to be introduced during the Jan-Tan budget. So the cycle there is we would have to have that proposal in prior to that January date. So we hope to have a proposal, I'm thinking October, November-ish, so kind of finalized prior to that last commission meeting that we're having. And that's, you know, it has to go through a process here. And obviously, maybe not obviously, but once we do have a BC budget change proposal in place, and that process starts, then at that point, the information on that
is confidential through that budget process. So having those recommendations sooner than later would help us to then identify those areas. Again, what we're going to be doing is taking a deeper dive from those recommendations of what it actually would look like, what potentially, you know, for example, if we introduced some type of non-motorized permitting access, whatever we may call it, what that's going to involve for the division, you know, as far as additional, you know, resources, what we'll need to get that started. And then other recommendations on program development with AI and the Aquatic Invasive Species Program, you know, what exactly would that look like moving forward? We're going to start looking at, you know, the program improvements within the division and what is going to be involved in that. And then where we can, for example, what was mentioned, I think earlier, was the loan program. If we decide to continue to defer that loan program, you know, is there really truly that need? And then if it is, you know, deferring it to a later or dissolving that program altogether. So it just, again, kind of really looking at the recommendations and then kind of moving it further and digging, you know, deeper into the financial aspect, you know, the resources aspect, and then looking overall at our budget, our balance in the Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund, and get to a place where we need to be in the future. So that's kind of, you know, the timeline here.
Great, thank you.
Yes.
And go ahead, Commissioner Murillo.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the November meeting, would that be a possibility for a healthy discussion about an economic impact report? The staff might have a little time to gather some perspectives from stakeholders. I recognize that this is not going to be a hard and fast number. Lots of things are moving. There are lots of intangibles, the benefits of the outreach, the education program, so on and so forth. But these are not items for argument. Rather, it's I think it would be an assemblage of the positive impact for the state. But it's not just the number of visitors who come in by boats and visit restaurants and things like that. It goes beyond that. We saw a lot of it today: education, outreach, environment, so on and so forth. But I really think this is deserving of a discussion. It doesn't have to begin and end at our next meeting. We might get an idea about a broad outline of how to approach this. I think the state, whether you're a boater or not, deserves to know how important our water resources are, more so than any other state in the country, arguably.
Thank you. Yes, I think that's fair. Yes, that's another thing that we'll be looking at as well.
Mr. Chair, could we possibly get that on the agenda just so it doesn't slip our minds between now and the fall?
Yep, that's noted for the agenda.
Thank you.
Any other suggestions for agenda items from the other commissioners? Okay, seeing no other suggestions, I will ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
No further discussion? Okay, this commission meeting is now adjourned.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you all again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody be safe.
Thanks again for doing this virtually. I think it was my fault, but I'm glad it all worked out. And we'll hopefully see everyone together again and wherever it's going to be in Long Beach. Okay, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.